plastic jelly. When we have adopting the robot and so on. But welcome everyone, legal services, also welcome to you, the department, and everyone who's here. I got an apology for 15 minutes, I will join us late. 2 minutes of other commitment, she's not here. Remember, before probably we start, we've got the invitation from your turn, the one-page document, a one-page document, I don't remember if you do have it. We are invited tomorrow. I'm told that the only Honorable Shin and Lin have confirmed attendance. Other members have not yet confirmed, so that the travel arrangement can be made, and so on. So probably we'll get confirmation when we finish the meeting, so that we'll know exactly where we're going tomorrow. It's tomorrow at ICC, something like that. Starting around 12 until, starting from around 1 and from after 12, it will finish until around the past 2 or so. Wednesday, we were the sitting starting at 3. So if members can bear that in mind. But we're invited to see the launch by your turn. But we'll confer with members after the meeting so that the necessary arrangements be made for those who be attending.
I hear that only 2 people have concerns. This is abuse of parliamentary facilities. Someone called me and I spoke to her and she explained what it was about. And then I confirmed yesterday. I don't know whether it came to the attention of the Secretary of Commerce. I don't know because, people are using the facilities and they don't do their work properly. So I'm one of the people who's definitely sure that I confirmed. But if you don't want me to go, I'm going to
thank you, Honorable Rudua. But I'm
Chairperson, and I have also responded. Unfortunately, I could not. I cannot attend due to sitting responsibilities. It is question day, and obviously we are preparing for that. So it is inconvenient, but I have responded.
Yourself and Parliament. Yeah, yourself and Parliament. Mutami.
Because we are on our own, one will have appreciated to see our colleagues seated from the opposition seated on the center side of the bench, so that we can see the night.
Yes, just thank you for the words of welcome. I am somewhat so bruised if I'm here though. And I'm not sure whether you're going to be pleased or saddened, but for the time being, anyway, I'm without my Bible. It's all been taken.
I think that's the time listen to this. It's another thing. No, I'm not a member. Other members probably just have to confirm with the committee to finish just to finalize the issue of transport. We are including you, Honorable Members. We can't leave you. The age should be a competitive advantage. That was thanks very much. Remember, that was one issue which we're supposed to just deal with quickly. We will just go straight to the matters of today. But let's push the issue of the program later and start with the other 2 businesses. As members were aware that we've got two outstanding issues which the committee is supposed to deliberate and take decision. One matter is the matter around the SADC, and you remember that around the 11, 18 and 19 September, we had meetings, and in those meetings came out from the board of the SADC that got challenges, which resulted in a situation where they indicated that they've got some challenges with one board member, which on the 19th they give us presentation at the committee, the board and the alleged and the member involved, with the alleging that she has behaved otherwise. We said we'll later come back to the issue so that we deliberate and take a decision as a committee in terms of how to proceed with that matter. As one issue. The second issue around during the annual report presentation, the second time around when called DOC, and the first time when they presented their annual report, the auditor general picked it up that some senior management members in DOC, they could not conclude their performance agreements or contracts. And I remember on the last meeting that there was an indication by the Director General of Communication that she did sign, which was confirmed by the Deputy Minister in that meeting. And later the Deputy Minister indicated that she was misled or misinformed. There's no performance contract which was signed with the DG. We said at that time we deliberated the committee and see how to move forward about that matter because it amounted to probably misleading Parliament in terms of what the DG was saying and so on. But both matters, we referred them to the legal service so that they can be able to advise us in terms of the option which we have as a committee in order to continue with the matter. I'll request the legal service to take us through the issue, but starting with one of SADC, and then we'll go to the are one of the Director General of the Department of Communication. Legal Service, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Honourable members, on the note of the SABC, do you recall that you had both the SABC's board as well as the member of the board, Afrikaans Mahlathi, who is the controversial member, present certain facts to this committee. What is currently before you is that SABC's board is complaining about the conduct of Afrikaans Mahlathi. They're indicating that she's disruptive in meetings, that she's hampering their functioning, and there was also an additional concern about certain expenditure that she requested and authorized herself. Afrikaans Mahlathi then had an opportunity to present, and although she did not talk too much about the incident of the expenditure, her sense on what the board concerns were regarding her being disruptive is that she's in fact not being disruptive, but she is a whistleblower. She is pointing out irregularities, and now she is being quietened by the board. So that is what you have before you. We have then done a number of opinions for you because this thing didn't just start yesterday. So at first, we had an inquiry that was done by the SABC board. That inquiry was then, defining was that in fact she should be dismissed, and that was then up to the minister, who would have sent it to the presidency as the appointing authority to do the dismissal. Now, our opinion was that while the one process is in place, the referral from the board on the inquiry to the presidency, this committee can't interfere in that process. However, it has since transpired that the presidency simply regards that referral as for information purposes, which means that, in fact, that inquiry seems to be closed. Now, it would first of all be advisable just to get that in writing, so that we don't at a later stage start inquiring and then the presidency is like, wait a second, there's something on my table, and how are you now transgressing into an inquiry that's already been conducted? And it shouldn't be too difficult. It can simply be a confirmation from the office. That must be from the president himself. It can simply be from his administrators to say, this document... I will try and speak a little bit louder, maybe. I am quite good. I'll up my voice. So it does not have to be from the president himself. It could simply from his administrator to say that this matter was referred to them, but they regarded it simply as for information purposes. And once the committee is in possession of that, then the second leg can commence. I suppose the committee can make a decision today. That is not being stopped, but before the actual inquiry begins, we need to have that letter. So from there, this committee then has a number of choices. And in fact, in our opinion, we indicate that this committee can either refer this matter for investigation to the Auditor General. We have consulted with their office. They have a process available that they can assist the committee with. Or the committee can decide to conduct the inquiry themselves. We have since established that there is a precedent for the National Assembly to actually appoint an ad hoc committee that could also deal with the inquiry. So it's actually now a third option that this committee could look at. And I would suggest that I'm going to take the committee through what the steps would be if the committee conducts the inquiry themselves, so that you can see whether this is something that you will have the time to fit into your schedule, because it's not going to be a one-day process. So, let's do first of all the Auditor General. I think that will be the easiest one to get out of the way. Now, the Auditor General has indicated to us that they can conduct a special integrated audit. This is simply because it is not part of the normal audit functions. But they have this, and this is something that can be requested. So it will be simply to present the Auditor General with every single factor this committee has. Say we want to understand, one, was he misconduct, or is this a whistleblower being silenced? Two, what is the extent of the unauthorized expenditure? So that would be the instruction to the Auditor General. Auditor General will, however, charge Parliament a fee for this. So if the committee decides to go that route, there will have to be a report to the National Assembly, because this committee is an extension of that house, to simply say, this is what we propose, and there would be a cost involved, so we also need that authorised. So that would be more or less what happens there. If the committee decides to conduct the inquiry itself, or even if an ad hoc committee is established, the following is what we would recommend. First of all, there will have to be a report to the National Assembly on the proposed route that this committee feels would be the most appropriate. And the reason for the report to the committee is simply because this is outside of normal functions of the committee. So it will be good to get the House in on this and get the authorization from the House to do so. Then I would advise that an advice on evidence be obtained from counsel. We'll do external counsel because this is a very thorough exercise and it will probably take a week or so for counsel to go through this. Now, what is an advice on evidence? We have received from the committee secretary the response from Advocate Maslati. We have received a number of documents, the documents from SABC's board, the statute and things like that, according to which they work, and we've also received certain transcripts. Now, all of that constitutes evidence, but it might not be sufficient evidence to actually prove a fact. It could just be a statement that someone made. So it could be evidence of a statement made rather than evidence of the truth of the statement. So what counsel will do for us on advice on evidence is it will say, fine, this committee needs to establish two main aspects. One, whether Africa Maslaki is actually her actions constitute or could constitute misconduct, or whether in fact she is the victim of a whistleblowing incident. And two, whether Advocate Maslati's actions when at the conference to incur additional expenditure for additional rooms and room service and things like that, whether that was unauthorized and therefore misconduct in itself. And in order to prove this, counsel will then put down all the facts and say, fine. And I think the easiest one to indicate you what the advice and evidence will look like will be the unauthorized expenditure. Counsel will say, fine, number one, an extra room was obtained. In order to prove this, what does this committee look at? This committee will have to have, number one, the approval for going to conference to see how many rooms were approved, how many people were approved, what fringe benefits, if you want to call it that, were approved. Could you take someone with you? Could you have your car washed? Things like that. Then secondly, we'll actually need from the hotel the invoice that says an extra room was in fact rented. By whom was it rented? So that will have to be on the slip. It will have to be signed by the hotel so that we know the formal document. Thirdly, who paid? So we'll need to have the receipt to see who the receipt was made out to and so on. Now if you have all of that evidence, then you will be able to say, number one, it wasn't authorized. Number two, it was in fact Advocate Mahlali. There is her name on the invoice. She ordered this extra room. Number three, it was paid by SABC. There is the receipt to them. And then that will be proven. So just that small fact, you can already see has quite a number of things that will have to be looked at. So once the abundance on evidence is before this committee, I am of the opinion that the evidence that will be led both by the SABC and Asif Maslati will probably take you at least 3 days. Because you are going to have more than one board member testifying. Judging by the previous presentation, I don't think she's going to be shortened to the point. It is clear that this is a personal matter for her. And unfortunately, when lawyers get personal, tend to talk a lot. So I doubt that this is going to be finished in one day. I would really estimate at least 3 days for evidence. Of course, Abid Maslati will have to be informed that the proceedings are going ahead. If she does not want to attend, that's not how to stop this committee at all. But she will have a right to attend and to hear the evidence that is being presented against her. And she will also have to be given the opportunity to call witnesses if she might have witnesses other than herself. Then the committee will have to consider all evidence. And in fact, if possible, and we'll have to see how far our budget allows, how far time allows, etc., if we can have the counsel who provided you with advice on evidence to sit in during the inquiry to advise you on credibility of witnesses, contradictory statements, etc. So there will then be a consideration of the evidence. Now, if you take how long a judgment often takes to be made, you're probably going to sit in consideration at least a day. And then, of course, there will be the report and the findings. So you're looking at about 5 full days that this committee will be sitting, or the ad hoc committee will be sitting. So that's just to give you a ballpark, so that you can make up your mind whether this should be something that this committee can do. Now, when we look at the ad hoc committee, that was in relation to the public protector. And the report that came back indicated that committee was more focusing on operational, things that went wrong on an operational level within the public protector, and they made it very clear that they're not sitting in judgment, which I think is a little bit different here, because this committee will have to make a due inquiry and you will have to reach a decision based on evidence before you. So you will to some extent be sitting in judgment. That recommendation then, should the recommendation be yes, we are of the opinion that something is wrong, and this member should be dismissed from the SABC board. That recommendation will be in the report. The National Assembly will make a resolution, and that resolution will be referred to the Presidency, who in terms of the Broadcasting Act, Section 15, they must dismiss. There is no discretion for the appointing authority if there is a resolution from the National Assembly. So now, those are the options. If I can quickly summarise, this committee has before you documents from both sides which clearly indicate something is wrong. I think it's definitely justifying an inquiry of some sort. The options are to refer this to the Auditor General, to do an inquiry by the committee itself in terms of Section 15, Capital A of Broadcasting Act, or to request the National Assembly to appoint an ad hoc committee that will conduct the inquiry, because it does not have to be this committee in terms of Section 15A. It is the National Assembly that conducts the inquiry. So the Assembly can decide who and where this inquiry should be conducted. Mr. Dish, shall I first stop here, or shall I go on to the next opinion immediately?
Thank you. Members, do I have to take them both, or one by one? was the first one in relation to the LABC. The second one supposed to be in relation to the PT. The question was to discuss this one and finish before we go to the next one. Or go to the next one. Honorable Gerard.
No, I suggest you go to the next one because since in essence they are interrelated, maybe by the time we come to the next one, we shall have more clarity on what to decide.
Mrotuwa, staying, killing, Palermo, Beijing, nothing.
Yeah, now that I understood the question, I think we should deal with them in the order they are in. We start with this one. Because they could look interrelated, but they are very different.
Anything different? Oh, thank you very much. Can we then go into this one? Then we'll go to the next one. So, Honorable Killen Singh.
Chairperson, just first of all, are we just asking first direct clarification issue and then go to proposals, recommendations on how the committee should deal with it, or did you want us to combine the two?
Let us deal about clarity because it was nothing to do about the decision of the committee. If you clarify whatever, then we can then later deal with how to move forward and so on. If there are issues which you need for clarity.
Thank you. Chairperson, through you then, can we just please establish, if this process is driven through the Office of the Auditor General, the need for us to verify the documentation, et cetera, that will clearly then be performed by the Office of the Auditor General, which will then result in a recommendation or their findings to this committee upon which the necessary decision could be made. Is that how we should understand the role and involvement of the Auditor General? Thank you, Chief.
Thank you. Sid?
I just want to spend some clarity on the outcome of the, if we do send it off to the Auditor General, the Auditor General's decision. What would be the next steps from that? What recommendations would the Auditor General make? Would it come back to the committee to make a recommendation on action?
Thank you, Mrotho.
Chairperson, you know, I would say maybe my next contribution would to identify which of these I think we should use as the committee. But I needed to know if my thinking is correct, if we would have to take the route of the Auditor General. Looking at the Auditor General's report, for instance, I want to give you an example on the issues that were the recent findings that they found, and they seemed to be not as serious according to them. But when we went and went for the entity, any entity, for instance, we found that if we interact with them, it is more serious than what we thought when we were given a report by the Auditor General, without undermining the Auditor General. Therefore, I would just like to know the impact really that would be given by the Auditor General according to how we have explained in this matter.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also just want clarity. Let's assume that we request the Auditor General to do it. We have to go through Parliament to get that approved. When the Auditor General completes their report and they provide us with a recommendation, would that recommendation be to this committee to then either accept or change, adopt, whatever, and then send it to the House? Or would it automatically be sent to the House for adoption or not? Thank you.
That was all. Sam.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. First of all, if the process goes through the Auditor General, the Auditor General will do the verification of all the evidence, all the documents. So this committee will have no involvement further, or need to have no involvement further in the evidence. However,
It does not mean that the committee should not have any role to play in the investigation of the Auditor General. When this committee requests the House for permission to refer this matter to the Auditor General, the committee can word its report in such a way that it's either the House that refers or this committee that refers. So if this committee requests National Assembly, we require permission to refer an inquiry to the Auditor General. The National Assembly is empowered by Section 15A to do this inquiry, whereof the opinion Auditor General will provide objectivity, will have the time, will have the capacity, which we don't have at this point in time. And therefore, we agree that we be allowed to refer this to the Auditor General. Then the committee will be running the process with the Auditor General. So the committee's instruction to the Auditor General can include consultation with this committee. Consultation with this committee in the presence of the SABC board, in the presence of Advocate Mashlati. You can prescribe how they must gather certain evidence from you. Of course, they will do their own investigative process, etc. But there is nothing that stops this committee from saying, we do want to give input. When you do bring your recommendations, we want to see a draft report. And we want to be able to comment on that draft report. And we might say to you, no, go back and look at further aspects. So all of that is quite possible when the Auditor General is looking at something. And then, of course, the next step then, once the recommendation comes, if the report is it is via the committee, it will come back to this committee. So I think, I just want to quickly, but I think I've answered all the questions in one. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just saying seriousness can be pointed out by this committee as well.
Okay. Elena, do you need? I'm fine now. You are clear. Okay. Can we go? Pana, this is why your hands going up or slowly going up?
I would like to ask from you as the person conducting this meeting. When we were, my understanding, when I said we'd like to have this part of the subject matter done now, was it that we're only going to need clarity, or we can decide which one do we opt for? Is it the inquiry done by us or the Auditor General or by a committee that would be selected by Parliament? Shouldn't we, you know, indicate here what we prefer?
We can do that after we satisfy yourself with the question of clarity and so on. For now, I was dealing with the clarity. Can I speak a little something? We are done. Now, can you explain the issue of Section 15A(b)(2) in either of the process, dealing with the suspension and the other things? Because the act is giving the appointing body power to suspend. Can you clarify that in relation of all the three proposed ways of dealing with that particular matter, what happened in that particular case? The other issue is, if you read the 16, the disqualification about disclosure of interest, it was part of the issues they are raising in the disclosure. And that 16 is saying that is supposing not to be appointed if dealing to so. And part of the allegation that has happened now, we had a case with CASA where that happened and that appointment at one point was nullified by the court that does not exist and so on. And then again with another process. Well, because it also goes to the act of Section 16, because there's an issue that this alleged member never disclosed any interest for a long time. I'm not sure that now she did. How do you interact with that? Because we might have a person that's not qualified to be a board member anyway, as we speak and so on. How do we manage those particular chances? So if maybe you can have some view around that.
Thank you, Mr. James.
First of all, in respect of the sanction, once the committee has decided that it will be an inquiry and how the inquiry will be done, it might in fact be a good idea at the same time that the report goes to the National Assembly to look into the matter of suspension. Section 15A, capital A, subsection 2, paragraph A, allows that the appointing body may suspend a member from the office at any time after the start of proceedings of the National Assembly for the removal of that member. So, the moment the National Assembly approves that an inquiry either by an ad hoc committee, by this committee or by the Auditor General may go ahead, then there may also be a request to the appointing authority that the member be suspended. Now, in this instance, however, the presidency will have a discretion whether to suspend or not, but it still is for the National Assembly to propose and to say we respectfully request that this member be suspended, and the reason that we will look at will be interference with evidence. That's usually your main reason for suspending, where other witnesses may be influenced, documents may disappear if the person is allowed to continue in the position. Especially in respect of the expenditure aspect, the disclosure of interest that has now been mentioned, it's very easy to slip a document in or to take a document out. So that kind of thing could be justifying a request for suspension. In respect of the non-disclosure of interest, if we look at Section 16, Section 16 is actually unfortunately very, whether the non-disclosure of an interest will still have to be via an inquiry. So I suppose the committee could decide to focus on one aspect only. That is a possibility as well, to focus on one aspect only. But still, the aggregate majority will have to be given an opportunity to present a case to say, but this is, you know, you're saying that I did not disclose, but here is my proof that I did. All these were the circumstances why I didn't. And then the committee can make a decision on that. But it is possible to simply go on one of the concerns.
Thank you, members. On a turn.
See, when you... Yeah. When you indicate when we will come to the crux of the matter, that we should make some recommendations, some concrete recommendations. And before we do that, if you will allow us to just consider in caucus our positions and come back with a clear recommendation.
When you say to come back with clear recommendation, you mean?
Chairperson, on the relevant issues that we have to evaluate. Because my concern is, Chairperson, that we are focusing on a matter where there are certain facts placed in documentation and there are other facts also placed at the counter. And we must really act like Solomon in the Bible to be very wise when we deal with this matter. Because it can in the end implicate not only one of the board members, but the board as an entity. And therefore, we really need to make sure that we scrutinize, we verify, we make sure of the facts before us as a committee, and then to make sure that we give credibility and justice to the process that is being followed. And therefore, I would like to suggest that you just allow us to consider these matters.
No, thanks very much. That will do. Probably that decision of dealing with one and another one, probably we must go to the next one. So that she also deal with the next one. Then when we have a discussion, let's discuss on both matters. I'm sure now we have done clarity and so on this matter. But I'm just worried that if we break and then reconvene and so on, but probably what we must do to allow her to go to the next one. We pack the next one. When we request caucuses, then we break to deal with both matters and then we reconvene and deal with those matters. But that would be my suggestion in terms of how to move forward.
Yeah, Chairperson here.
with due reflection, you know, from the explanation that has been given to us by Honorable Killing, maybe some, you know, other more board members would be implicated. I don't think who is the party here that composed this committee. We are on the same line of understanding. I would really agree with Honorable Kirian on those basis that I think we need and deal with this and wrap it up and go to that.
Okay.
Chairperson, I think that in coming to a decision on what action we're going to take on the SABC and the board and as a trustee, that we do not necessarily need to go into the detail of the allegations. What we are doing is discussing the legal advice we've been given with our knowledge of the issue. I see no reason for us to break away and have a caucus. I don't know what a caucus is as far as I know. You know, we're a committee. And we need to discuss this, I think, as a collective committee. And we don't need to go into detail. I think there's some fear that some of the detail of the allegations will be made public because the media is here. And we don't need to go into that detail, I don't think, at this stage. Unless we go into the inquiry, then that word information will come up at another stage. So I would suggest that the committee just discuss this and move on.
Chair, 2 points. The first one, the one you've made, that we got a presentation on the first item and the one on the DJ Mansour Sofolo, because I'm going to agree and differ with the last speaker that the first one has three options, and it will help, I think, for parties to caucus which option they think is the best. Just to see ideas, merits and demerits of each option, because they are not easy options. And secondly, that when you do that on the DG also, if there are options or certain decisions to be taken, we get an opportunity as different caucuses just to exchange and see which options we like. So I think firstly there's a need for a short caucus, and secondly, both must be presented. The second one must also be presented.
Chairperson, you'll pardon me. I don't understand very well what my colleague was saying. My left. But I suppose it will come out clearly, because I'm intending to do what Honorable Sheen and Kevoli did. They did caucus. I saw that. So we need such also. It is precisely for the issues that are raised by Honorable Sheen that I needed us to have a caucus. So I still stand by saying we need it. And I suppose from the little bit that I heard from my left, I'm supporting that.
What I can do is to deny you an opportunity to talk to each other, to come to a decision. That remains the issue of the members to do. So if members feel that they need a caucus, it's okay. You'll have your caucus to consolidate whatever then, so that we're able to move on. But what I was suggesting, members, was that instead, because I can't stop you from caucus, my suggestion was that they probably take also the next issue, so that when people want to caucus, they caucus on both. Rather than breaking for the first one, then there's a presentation probably members again say, no, we need to caucus. We should make two caucuses. So that was my suggestion. That we've got the facts on the first one, the activities and so on. So let's go to the next one, so that when people break for caucus, they caucus for both. So that way we come back, we conclude the right other than doing separate and so on. That's what I was requesting, that probably must do that. Honorable Chin?
There are four caucuses in this committee, Chair, not two.
So it will be eight, I suppose. Can we do that, members, that we break one to caucus for the two issues, not to break the issue? Can we proceed in that manner? Because that will help us in time.
There was a little that I wanted to ask
me.
You're not putting it in
your door.
Can I? You can ask the
question. I told you I don't need to ask.
Okay,
you can ask.
Huh?
You can ask.
Then I'm also asking one of the
bulletin. If you raise your smart red board and raise this one, I still get that. And then if you must raise board, so that I will fix it.
Never disturb me with anything. I don't know why.
Okay. This issue of the Auditor General option that we can consider. I read you outlining how the ad hoc committee can work, but now I wanted to understand on the AG side, because my concern is that you know what is the mandate of the AG, though with the special audit that we're gonna conduct. My worry is that do they have the capacity in house, or is it still going to be a long process wherein they have to outsource? Because my understanding, the Act says inquiry. No matter the 80, what we need will be special, like you call it specially integrated audit. They will go and audit. Will that substitute an inquiry? Because my understanding is that, and then also the capacity of the 80. And then the other issue, because I think you also done the cost analysis benefit, because it's for the fee, definitely will be for the fee, and then they need also to outsource the services of the legal practitioners that need to see that to do the inquiry. Maybe if you can share with us the cost analysis benefit of it. And then the issue of the obtaining the return confirmation from the president. What is the implication of that? Is it correct the behavior of the board, or what? I want to understand it, because as I'm reading it, I'm not clear on that. Thank you.
Anderman?
Thank you, Mr. Shane.
The other Anderman, not the other one.
If I may start with the written confirmation from the president. The written confirmation from the president is simply to say that the process started by the board is not something that the president is going to act on. That the president is regarding that as simply for information purposes. Because what he has is that Section 15 gives two processes, one starts by the board and the other starts by the committee doing something. Now, because the board has started one process, this committee can't interfere unless that process has run its course. So the presidency giving a letter saying, no, we simply regarding this for information purposes, will close that inquiry, which opens the door for this committee to conduct an inquiry. The second question in respect of the Auditor General, whether they have capacity, I did an interview with Mr. Lauren van Vuren of the Auditor General's office in Pretoria, and I explained to him the situation, and what he said to me is that there's a unit allocated to special integrated audits, and they can draw from other units as well. So to me, it seems that they have the capacity, but I can't speak for them. So I got the impression that he is capacity. As to cost, members must also keep in mind that if the committee I don't have the exact cost, because the Auditor General will have to look at the facts and then give an estimate, yes, this will take us a month or 2 months, and therefore it will cost you $50,000 or $100,000, depending on what their fees are. I don't know what their fees are. And advice on evidence from counsel, we are probably looking at between $10,000 and $20,000. But then for the committee members who sit for 5 days also has cost implications. Because it will have to probably be a non-committee day, which means it might mean extra flights and things like that. So I have not done where I've put the two options next to each other and written down all the costs, because it's not that easy actually to get all those costs together. But if that is something that a committee wants to consider, I would have to work via the committee secretary to assist with getting quotations and seeing how things will pan out between the two options.
I think, however, that you will probably end up very close on either option. In respect of the just the other aspect that was on the mandate of the Auditor General and how it affects the inquiry, the Broadcasting Act does not prescribe how the inquiry must be done. So, if this committee decides to refer the inquiry to Auditor General, that will be as if the committee is seeking expert advice. The Auditor General report will not be the finding. This committee will still have to look at the finding of the Auditor General. It is just that the Auditor General will now be giving the advice on evidence. The Auditor General will go through the evidence, will consider the evidence, will do consultations, will do the interviews, and will reach a decision on credibility of witnesses, credibility of documents before them, and come back to this committee and say, I've looked at all of this evidence, and these are my findings. And then the committee will look at that and say, fine, we now have an expert that says this to us, we agree or we disagree. So it will still be part of the inquiry, it will just be using the services of the expert.
Outsourced inquiry.
Honourable Sir? Chair, my apologies, but just in further explanation, something else has sort of come up to me. Does there, in fact, is there another option? And I'm referring to the letter that you're talking about that you need to get from the presidency. Is there the option where the presidency could, in fact, then indicate to us that they will take the matter further?
Claire?
Yes, I would like to have a better understanding. First of all, it seems that, as the advocate indicated, we have two processes that are prescribed in 15. We have a 15 and a 15 capital A process. Now, originally it was started as a 15 process. The only thing is, from the committee conducting the oversight, we don't really have evidence of what the due inquiry constituted of the board before they before they approached the minister. And I think that was also why the minister expressed concern about the process followed. Just in going forward, is this perhaps something that should be closed in on, that we clean up this part of the Act, so that there's only one provision as the committee responsible for the appointment of the board on recommendation to the National Assembly for appointment by the President? Is it not also more appropriate that the same appointing institution, the committee, also be dealt with as in terms of 15A? Now, don't we have to make sure that there's only one process that could be followed, just going forward? What is the advice of the advocate? But that is just passing. I mean, this is now clear. We just need a clarity from the Office of the President to say that they will not proceed any further. They regard it for information. And therefore, then, once that process is closed, the 15, then the 15A process can kick in. But the second thing that I wanted to raise is, if the committee would convene, or the ad hoc would convene, it is not only, as I see it, that the role of an external outsourced advocate would have to be to assess the and verify the documentation. It could also be necessary for such a person to sit in during the inquiry over 5 days, which we will have to also calculate in our comparative analysis of costs. And that could also be quite steep if we look at the fees that could be forthcoming. So I think we must also just bear that in mind, and I would like the advocate to comment on that. Thank you.
Thank you, members. I will comment on that. But look, members, that probably she will explain. But we probably, as we move on, we are going to narrow down the issues. What is that exactly which we are facing as a committee we must deal with? To me, the issues, as we move forward, it will be clear that we have passed a legislation which saying people must disclose their interest. That has not happened. And it came out during the committee session when we asked questions that two board members never disclose their interest, the other one is still resigning, the other one is remaining, and they are alleged advocate. We have not to do so. That is a clear prescription of the legislation. So when we deal with these issues, we must put aside things which come as high education and the principle of the legislation. What is the people supposed to do when we think it happens? Because you see, if you want to end up dealing with education and so on, we'll end up swimming there in the mud, not even knowing how to come out. But the fact is that this parliament passed laws, and we expect everyone to comply or to obey those laws and so on. So those are the issues I'm dealing with, which probably will have to come to that conclusion as well. What are we dealing with as a committee? Whatever things we talk about or moving forward. But the advocate fundament, the other fundament.
Thank you, Mr. Chen. In respect of the, there are two buses. Let me start there. Section 15, subsection 1 has a paragraph A and a paragraph B. Paragraph A allows for the SABC board to conduct an inquiry in respect of misconduct or inability to perform duties. And then the National Assembly can conduct an inquiry on the terms set out in the Section 15, capital A. Whether there should only be one process is going to be a policy decision. That is not really something that, from a legal point of view, I can give you advice on. What I can say, however, is that you must keep in mind that misconduct can start from something very simple, maybe attending one meeting and the next meeting not picking up, and then attending the next meeting, and then there's no provision for you to be wrapped across the knuckles, but then the SABC board will have to come to the committee for every type of misconduct, even if it is slight. So keep the practical implications in mind as well, because I think we are now thinking maybe of serious misconduct, but there is also something smaller that might have to be attended to by the board. For instance, in fact, the fact that someone, for instance, is not speaking through the chair could simply be misconduct that the chairperson can handle there and then. But if we take that away, you might have a problem. So if we do decide, so we have to be very careful to describe the type of misconduct that we're talking about. So we might have to say more serious implications, etc. And we'll only have one route. That is the decision to go. Now, in respect of the appointing body may remove a member if the board investigated, and that process that is undergoing. As I understand the inquiry that was done by the SABC board, it has a number of flaws. It seems to me that there weren't sufficient consultation with Akhilis Maslati during the investigation. Unfortunately, that is simply something that we can see on a report. They say that they have sent letters and sent invites, but there's no proof attached to that report of what was done. They also come to a conclusion on the expenditure, but no evidence is attached to that report. So I would be a little bit careful to rely on that report specifically, because it makes allegations and doesn't give supporting evidence. Supporting evidence might be there. I'm not saying it's not there. And it might be that they looked at it, but it is not clear from their report. And that is what the presidency has to rely on. And it seems to me that because of that evidence lacking is why the presidency simply regarded that for information purposes. So that, to some extent, stops that avenue. But may I just capture on what the chairperson ended on with Section 17 and conflict of interest. The conflict of interest, I'm not 100% certain. I'll have to think about this and look into it. But if I just read Section 17, I don't think non-disclosure in itself will be sufficient to make someone ineligible to be the board member. It will be misconduct, however, not to disclose, because there is a legislative requirement for it to be. If it comes about that there is a conflict of interest,
Thank you,
Mr. D. If it was in fact a conflict of interest at any period of time, that is definitely something that that will go to make a person ineligible to be a board member.
Advocate Palermo versus Clay on the issues. I can see you want to play around. I'm having a way from taking decisions. Let's go to the next one.
Thank you, Mr. Chen. The next one is to some extent more serious and less serious. Misleading the House,
or a committee with information or a statement is in fact a criminal offence in terms of the powers, privileges and immunities of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act. So in that sense, it is more serious. If you put a misleading document or you make a misleading statement, you commit an offence. What we must look at the fact before this committee, the fact that the DG said, I did submit, or I did sign, I submitted, and then the DM said, no, nothing was submitted. If you have conflicting versions of the situation before you. Now, any criminal offence is something, I think, that must be regarded seriously. And before any charge is put to the police, the complainant must at least feel there is prima facie, if there's nothing to gain, say this, if there's nothing against these facts that I have before me, this will result in a conviction. That's what I mean with prima facie. I might be convinced that if nothing else comes forward, that this makes out an offence, and then I go and put in a charge. Of course, you can just go and put in the charge if you want to, but the reason for that is simply that it is serious to open up a charge against someone for having committed an offence. So my advice to this committee would be, start with getting the facts. We have two conflicting versions. We've got a he said, she said, and this day I think it was a she said. But it would be very, I would advise this committee to first call upon the DG to say, there has been a statement made to us that when you told us you have submitted your performance agreement, that in fact is not the truth. And if the committee wants to highlight how serious this is, the committee can point out, do you realize that not telling the truth constitutes an offense? So please then come and explain to the committee what happened, so that this committee can understand where we are at. The other reason why, look, first of all, hearing the other side is what consultation is about. We, People's Parliament, we can't just make up our mind on one person's say-so. So it is a fundamental principle, hearing the other side. It's a fundamental principle in law. It is, if you do, to make a decision, you must hear both sides. So that would be step one. But to lay charge, the kind of misleading that happened here could have a defense that it is so slight that it does not constitute an offense. There's a defense in law which says, if I just push you like this and you open up a charge of assault against me, I can say to the magistrate, so slight. It was an accident. It was not even, how can it constitute an offense? And the magistrate might find, yes, you did touch the person. Yes, you did push the person, but it's not assault. Because it is too slight to actually constitute an offense. And I am worried that with the saying that I have not submitted this document versus I have submitted this document, that might come up. And that is another reason why I would say, let's first find out exactly what happened. Was it an intent to mislead Parliament? Was it done with the intent to hinder Parliament in its oversight functions? Because if that was there, then it becomes very serious. But if a person, for instance, thought by herself, but I did submit, I put it on my secretary's desk to submit, and then it turns out it wasn't submitted, but it was simply negligence on her side. She thought it was, didn't follow up. You know, it changes the picture slightly. And then you don't want to be in a criminal proceeding when that kind of thing comes out. Then in respect of, should it be established that in fact the DG did mislead Parliament, did make this statement just to get the fire off her and get it to go away and we'll deal with it at a later stage, then any person can lay a charge for in respect of a criminal offence. So the committee can go to police and open up a charge. However, because it's part of an oversight relationship, I would advise that the committee first approach the minister and say to the minister, you're responsible for this department and one of your senior members has given misleading evidence to Parliament. It constitutes an offence if it is misleading with the intent, you know, if it was presented with the intent to mislead. So what are you going to do about this? I mean, the minister can come back to this committee and say, this is what I've done, or, you know, I am not going to do anything. And then the committee can make a decision on what the minister is saying. If the committee is satisfied, of course, then the minister will do whatever actions he or she says they will do.
and then coming back to this committee will report, I have done. Or if the committee feels no, this is not sufficient, the committee will then put that in a report to the National Assembly and say, we are a bit concerned about this, that, and the following. And then, of course, becoming at a decision in the House, that I don't have to tell you as a politician has serious political implications. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Would that applicable to the foreign executives of the state entities? Of misleading of information?
Yes, I do think to some extent, but there's also legislation that comes into play. So we need to look at the different pieces of legislation. But they do report to the minister, and as such, oversight is through the minister. And therefore, the committee can require the minister to take certain action.
That's because there's quite a number of them sometimes take charges in terms of their reporting. That's why I want to be certain. Probably we have 10 following after this one. But I will play.
Thank you, Chair. Just some further information that I would like to verify. Would it not be important for the committee to also establish the effect of not signing a performance agreement? In other words, is it non-compliant with other legislation? For instance, treasury regulations, the whole issue of performance and monitoring of the public sector. We have a minister in the office who's going through all of that. So, because ultimately, there's a package agreement with senior officials in the public sector that we enter into an agreement. This is your income based on achieving the following performance sort of targets. Now, failing to sign such an agreement clearly also has financial implications because the entire department could be at risk and there could be no consequence for the relevant senior officials who are supposed to be accountable to the minister. So would you also advise us to maybe include this in our investigation and interaction with the minister to say what exactly are the implications? I mean, because the concern is, if the performance agreement is not signed and there is dissatisfaction on the side of the executive, sometimes it results in unnecessary fruitless expenditure, for instance, by the department because they have to come to an agreement of severance to some extent, which could have expenditure implications, etc., for the department. So would the advice be that we also scrutinize that component of the impact of not signing a performance agreement? Thank you, Chair.
I can hear what the legal advice is saying that we should call her. But remember, calling her, she was there. It's not like she wasn't there when all this happened. When she said it, she was there. When it was countered and somebody said, no, she hasn't signed, she was there. So you'd have expected her to say, no, I have signed, I'll bring. Should persist and say, I'll bring proof. But maybe the advantage that giving us the benefit of the doubt, maybe she was not aware of the consequences. Because this thing in law confuses. One day they'll tell you, if you one person steals 1 billion, the other one 20 rand, you can't say no to the judge, I've stolen 20 rand, right? It's not that. The principle you have stolen. So now you say if you push a little bit, it's just a little thing, the law can condone that. So the law itself has sorted itself out because it confuses us. But just in case she's confused and she's not aware that this has real consequences, that is why I agree she must come so that we make things very clear. You never know actually why people act in a certain fashion. Who knows? There might be a good reason why she didn't respond. Maybe she felt it was so disrespectful to the deputy minister. So let's go that way. But I was just saying, as a matter of fact, she was there when all this happened.
Tom?
Thank you, sir.
Mine is on the paragraph 9 of the legal opinion. Say, paragraph 7 and 8 has been complied with, and then it says that the committee will also report to the National Assembly on the conflicting evidence received, as well as subsequent responses of the Director General of the Minister. I want you to outline the process then, what happens then, well, what happens then thereafter. That's my issue now.
Chairperson, haven't listened to me. Good advocacy. Some of the things I said, I agree with my colleagues, the law is confusing. But when we go to the utterances in the meetings, where this emanates from, somehow, if not the party concerned, the DG, did agree that it was the second report that she gave us of not signing the performance agreement was wrong, because previously, 2-3 days ago, she had given us another, a different version of the whole thing. Thank you very much. Now, this is where we based our concern, and we did indicate to her in that meeting that is she aware of what are the implications of the, what she has done? For that matter, I think I would agree that the minister comes to the committee as well as the DG, so that we have witnesses and we have done what is supposed to be done, and it must be done by the committee, starting to exercise what is written here. Because, you see, I'm coming to a point where if a person can mislead Parliament so many times, she can even deny what she did on that particular day. So I would like to say, Chairperson, let us invite her and tell her what are the implications. As much as we have done in that meeting, I doubt very much if she cannot change the evidence. And also invite the minister so that we start with things with confidence.
You can, any other hand, is it omitted or nothing? You can respond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it would be a good idea to ask what the impact is of not signing a performance agreement. I think that's a very good idea. So that will also give an idea to this committee of the seriousness of misleading the committee. In respect of the law being confusing, I do apologize to members. I tried to explain a very difficult concept as easy as I could do it. But I also ask you to remember that lawyers need to eat as well, and that's why we keep the law confusing if we can. But that's just on a lighter note. In respect of the DG being there when the DM made the comment about it not being signed, the reason why I would still suggest that the DG be given the opportunity to specifically answer is that sometimes as you are sitting in a meeting, things happen. She might not have been paying attention at that point in time. And we know that she's on the attendance register, but she might have been answering an SMS, not listening to what's being said. And I'm making up excuses that I'm going. But anything good has happened. And if then suddenly there's interaction from the minister's side, there might be a very good explanation. And then it seems a bit almost an unfair persecution of someone. But I do think that the proposal of having the minister here when the DG explains is a very good idea. because that short-circuits the whole process to say, Felicia must come and explain, now that you are aware that what you have done could constitute a criminal offence, come and explain to this committee, but we wanted the minister to sit here and listen and hear what you are saying. And then the minister can explain to this committee what he's going to do about it at the same time. In respect of the process to follow, the report to the National Assembly is first of all simply to have the whole House be aware of what has occurred. And that in itself puts political pressure on the department. But when the report to the House becomes very important is if the committee is not getting cooperation from the department, because that opens it up and allows for political interaction to make sure that things do occur. So the process that, if I can summarize just maybe quickly, would be I would advise informing the DG, the minister, this is what has happened, we would like you to attend and have it explained, and if it can't be explained, what the minister is going to do about it. That can then be reported to the National Assembly as part of the normal reporting that the committee does. And then, of course, the progress reports that will come in from the minister.
Thank you. Any other things? You did advocate the difficult thing is that we don't know how many times that has happened and what is we must trust anymore or again as a committee. That's the problem. Because one might assume that from the onset of the annual report, all what she was saying was not true, it was not honest. And that puts credibility on the entire work. So I think it might be legal, not serious. But for us, when next time the DG appears before the committee, you say, just respect me when she's big members, just must go and grab tea and go on anyway, she must walk on until she finishes, but no one trusts what she says. That's the implication. Probably legally it might be something else, but for us members, well, we can't waste our time listening to people which are speaking for the sake of saying it, and so on. Probably, I think that's the most contentious. Of course, we don't have probably the vengeance against and so on. It's just a matter of saying people must understand that when they come in, whatever they say, because one member asks, what else is not true from the annual report? How do you respond to that question? Because the senior member of the department, the head of the department, decided not to lead by example. In particular, if a junior person will indicate that it's not true what the DG is saying. So if a person leading by dishonesty in such a way that junior officials now have to instill honesty, it becomes a problem. How do you move forward in dealing with that parliament? But anyway, we are under a legal framework environment. We have to follow things in terms of that. Thanks very much, Advocate. But Member T is here. The hand walk has come to a hand. T is outside before the Chinese parties. You know what they do when they pass and find T. It depends on the advocate where our T was ready here. Outside, then they were coming looking parliament, then they called, they said, oh, South Africa, nice. They also give us tea, also both of them, and they drank the tea and continued with their parliament by seeing and so on.
My question was about killing the bull by his own. To say, as having complied with all what is recommended, and then at the end of the day, the committee needs to report to the National Assembly, asked about the process. That person left what will happen so that we don't have to even comply with the entire process, then we have to go back to AID. I wanted to understand the process method in respect to paragraph 4.
What she said, you repeat. You said the committee's got the. You can handle this matter in a way that after we agree that we call the DG to come and explain herself, we can then ask the minister to act. Then the minister will have to come back to the committee in terms of what course of action she has taken, or she will indicate what course of action she is going to take. If we are satisfied about that, that closes the matter. And the issue of the National Assembly is of political pressure, that the minister must act or the parliament must act on the matter. But maybe you can start afresh in your legal jargon.
Thank you, Mr. Chin. May I also just use this opportunity that I do not mean that Ms. Lee was not serious. I simply mean that once you have a criminal charge, there is defense. And that is why I would advise 50 years. The process, if I look at my opinion, what I've done is to say that, first of all, the DA to come and explain, to say that this is not done something that's done lightly. Now, if that had already been done, the next step would be now the minister. And say to the minister, look, we are not satisfied with this. We regard this as quite seriously. And as the chairperson now explained, that is how to be explained to the minister. You want us to do oversight, but how do we trust the word of what your senior officials are saying? Your most senior official, in fact, is saying. So what are you going to do about this as minister? Now, because it is a criminal offence, if it was done with intent, etc., for me, almost the only option that the minister would have is disciplinary action coupled with opening a charge. So the minister will then have to come back and say, look, this is what I've done, we've entered into consultation, or I am going to, the disciplinary action might end up in dismissing. So that will be what will be then explained to this committee, and this committee can then, as part of normal reporting, report to the House, or if this committee feels that we need further political pressure on this, it is clear that there's not sufficient action being taken, then a different kind of report, which says we are not satisfied with this, with that, the following. What we recommend should happen is the following. And then it can actually be escalated to the point where the speaker can write a letter to the minister and say that, you know, we need to understand what's going on and what are you doing about this. So that is the process that will follow there. So once it goes to the House, why I'm not really going into that, because it becomes more a political process than a legal process. And that I would rather leave to the Honourable Members.
I hear what you mean. Members, let's break. Look, members, we have requested some discussion and so on. Probably let's break for 10 minutes for the tea. And then you can take how many minutes we want to end it. Don't want to call us. How many times? 10 minutes, 20 minutes? 15. Can we be back at quarter to that? Yes. 10 minutes 40 and 20 minutes for the caucus, that will put you in front.
3 minutes
The problem is that the people who have asked caucus, I'm looking at them, they're not saying anything. I'm talking to you now, we've not asked the caucus. Sitting. Can members agree that we take 10 minutes for tea, which will take us to 20 past, and then you can have your, can we come back 20 to 12? There is no harm in meeting again. Actually, Honorable Kevin agree that it's actually healthy. So I'm not sure how to have healthy come in condemnation, but he's saying it's actually healthy to finish eight and so on. Members, the legal services presented the two matters before us in relation to the two issues which we had as a committee to take decision upon. The first matter is in relation to the issue of the SAPC, in relation to the issues raised by the board against Advocate Matasi, and as the legal services indicated that indeed has raised certain issues in response to the issues raised by the board. We finally have something in your pocket. You can feel package. There is something which is coming from advocates in terms of responding to some of the issues. The second matter is the matter of the DCs in relation to the committee meeting and what has been seen or reported as misleading the committee around certain issue of the performance contract and so on. Now, the two matters have been presented. We'll start with the first one, as per your directive, that we deal with one and then we go to the other one. Let's start with the issue of the SIPC. Three options have been presented before the committee. One is an inquiry which can be led by the committee itself. Secondly, is the issue of outsourcing that part of work. In this instance, the legal service, they are indicating the Auditor General of South Africa. But I may add that it can be any other institution which can investigate. It's not only necessary that it could be the HESA, it could be any other institution to do that. And the third one is the ad hoc, a committee which might be established by the National Assembly to deal with the matter. So those were the three options presented. You asked your clarities and so on, now we are clarified. Those were worried about 15 capital letter A to B. All of them have been responded to that either way, whether the ad hoc or and other inquiry conducted by AGSA, that clause will only kick in or can still kick in as soon as the National Assembly adopts the process or the recommendation of the committee in dealing with that. So neither of the processes interfere or do away with that particular clause because the one other issue has been raised. Now, members, it's open for you for engagement and agreeing in terms of how to move forward. Honorable Father Mefe, Honorable Sheen, Honorable Killen.
Thank you very much, Jefferson. From my side, I think I would propose a process led by the Auditor General. I think as a committee, we are pressed for time and this is an urgent matter which needs to be expedited. I don't think that we've got the necessary expertise, but I do think that the Auditor General's office could lead or do justice to this process. And therefore, I would really like to propose that we go the Auditor General's route. Thank you, Jefferson.
Is your proposal because we don't have the expertise as a committee or the issue of time? Or we did do an inquiry as a committee at one time.
Chairperson, I'm just saying that I'm sure that the Auditor General, I'm sure that they've got additional expertise to the expertise that we've got as a committee, Honourable Chairperson.
Okay. I just presume that we don't have expertise. But I'm kidding.
Thank you, Jefferson. I would like to support that, but my motivation is because it is of a technical nature. A lot of the inquiry will be of a technical nature, compliance issues, as well as financial issues, and therefore I would like to support the notion that it is going through the Auditor General process, but that the committee then retains the interaction and that we go to the National Assembly, understanding that ultimately it will come back to us after the findings of the Auditor General has been concluded and they present the report, then we will take the matter forward. Chairperson, as far as the section 15A to B issue is concerned, A issue is concerned, the matter was extensively discussed and Honourable Shin will communicate the view. That we agreed to as far as that process is concerned. Thirdly, I just wanted to emphasize that I do believe that there was a role for either this committee or the or an ad hoc, but having considered the matter in great detail and the issues at stake, it is best to have this independently managed process with the necessary expertise. Not that this committee doesn't have expertise and not that you have conducted the previous inquiry incorrectly, but I do believe that in this instance it is important
that there must be credibility of the process and the outcome of it, that it is compliant to all sort of natural justice principles as well, and therefore to submit all the evidence and to ask the Auditor General to scrutinize and to verify the necessary documentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Oshin.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, we agree that the process should be the Auditor General route, basically because I think we're all aware of the tremendous time pressures on the SABC to get itself in shape and effectively operational. And the Auditor General has intimate knowledge of the problems at the SABC from repeated audits, so it has an intimate knowledge of what these issues are about. It can start this process running, hit the ground running with this. And we would suggest that initially that the Auditor General has a look at the evidence that we already have and use their experience of numerous audits to perhaps come out initially with a report as to how the process should then proceed. And on the issue of whether the complainant in this issue should be suspended, we believe that an issue here is the credibility of the whole process. Either side in this argument are equally capable of, how should we say, shuffling the evidence around or withholding evidence, and so we would believe that neither, the option was either to suspend the advocate or suspend the entire board. We don't believe that that is a viable option. So therefore we say that no one should be suspended while the investigation is ongoing, but that we actually proceed with the utmost haste through the Auditor General.
Thank you. Advocate Pandromeva must clarify. The second we are dealing with is when there is an issue of alleged misconduct or acts dealing with a board member or the board. Because I don't want us here to play the impression that we are just netting. We are here for the board member. So I don't want to see the general statement. That is general. No, what is general? That thing is dealing about the conduct of a board member of the board. Here there is an issue raised about a board member who counter with allegations. So for me to be clear, they were not opening an investigation against the SABC board. So I think advocate, you need to help us there because we might not reach a wrong conclusion. We should be interpreted otherwise. We are not investigating the SABC board or any inquiry against the SABC board. But probably I must give the advocate to clarify that. So that when we agree, we agree understanding exactly what are we agreeing on and what that particular section we are intending to do. Because if we don't do that, I can tell you, we'll have a lot of interpretation that we are doing, what we are intending to do. Advocate.
Thank you, Jason. Indeed, Section 15, Capital A, Subsection 2, that speaks to suspending a member from office. So the suspension is not in relation to the whole board, it is only in relation to a member. And in respect of the investigation that has to be conducted, the investigation is, as you say, in relation to a member of the board. What has happened is that the defense of the member is that the member is being harassed because she's a whistleblower. So in looking at the defense, the Auditor General will probably, or the committee, or whoever does the inquiry, ad hoc committee, this committee, or the Auditor General, will have to look and see, is there something here that I feel needs to be looked at? And then the recommendation will be, no, it seems that there is something that must be looked at, and that this person was in fact victimized. So the inquiry at this point in time is in relation to her conduct, and not in relation to the board.
Thank you. I wanted that clarity so that we are clear what we are dealing with, so that there is no misinterpretation, because we might wear something which will be difficult to deal with as well. Honorable Ilenen was asking.
Hey, person, I think I was clarified, because my understanding was that the reasons and the documentation submitted by relevant board member would also just be scrutinized and investigated. Because
Because if it is true that she's saying that she's being victimized, I think that should be part of the investigation so that we establish the veracity of both sides' accusations. And I think that is what we wanted to make, to have clarity about. Thank you, James.
Thank you. But I'm sure now we will clarify. Here there is a matter of alleged conduct of a board member. That's what we are all about. But the board member is also laying other things, which should come in her defense also. But the premise of the process is the board, the alleged misconduct of a board member. Just wanted to clarify that because we don't want to come out here and then we are told that we have instituted an inquiry against the SEC board. That's why I was raising the issue of that particular section, which probably advocate must also help. Because when you read that section of the suspension and so on, it will seem as if it also goes to the discretion of the appointing board. Whether we have to instruct or say something, but probably advocate will just help us, because it seems as if it becomes the discretion of the appointing board whether to or no, and so on. I know it's a matter which we have to crack our heads where that will appointing board we will see around that. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Yes, in fact, the appointing body has a discretion, but I would say that because there is no requirement for a notification to the appointing body that there is an inquiry underway, it would be good if the committee feels that the asset must likely should be suspended, that recommendation is made to the House, and the National Assembly can then make that recommendation to the appointing authority. But it does, of course, not mean that the appointing authority will suspend. The presidency may decide to do so or not to do so. But, as you are saying, even if the National Assembly does not bring it to their attention, they may still do so if there is an inquiry like this.
Honourable Mrutwa, seen will follow before I'm not asked.
No, I must tell you what we did because I understand. And the process that we went through of the advocate explaining to us, it can be clarified most of the things. And I don't think my intention is to direct what she has explained to us. I think all that has been said here is what I was concerned about when the issue of the body. Nevertheless, it is explained to me. And I just wanted to indicate that not I, but let me say, I don't want to speak for the others because they might be having points that they want to emphasize on. I would prefer the opinion of the auditor general. One of the things is that it would be, I wanted to say at some instance that who is going to carry the cost. Now it is quite clear if it is the Auditor General, it will be Parliament. Then in the back of my mind, it still lingers to ask, I thought the DOC has got a lot of money.
might assist us. And at the end, what was affirming my concern was that at the end, the advocate explained to us that we have an opportunity as a committee to indicate where we think we are not satisfied, and then that is inclusive now of the committee, because I thought this was going to leave out the committee, so I am satisfied then with the Auditor General being the option that we take. Thank you, Professor.
Thank you, Mutua Singh.
Thank you, Chair. My thing is that on the suspension is that there are a few parties to this argument, and we can't suspend one without suspending the other. And while I might have said it in jest and perhaps not clearly, I do not believe there are grounds for suspending the advocate at this stage. I would also like to suggest that before the end of this term, assuming we get the Auditor General process going through, that they give their preliminary report to us on whether there is grounds to proceed with the process by the end of this year. So I think the last week of December would be a good time to come back and give a sort of paper-based research position on the intimate knowledge of how the FWC board operates, whether there is a need for an investigation to go further. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think we're all in agreement that the inquiry is against one bottom.
Further support in terms of getting the AG to put on our behalf.
In terms of the question about suspension, I would like, and I think it has been said, but I would like to suggest that as part of the mandate to the Auditor General, that once the advice of evidence has been done, that they then come back with an interim report about whether there should be a suspension of one or the other or the entire board before the process proceeds in terms of doing the rest of the investigation. Thank you.
Member, let me help you again. There will be no situation where the AG will come back and say the entire board must be suspended. Once the institution inquires against the board, you see, that needs to be clarified. You see, if you are an institution and inquire against the board, the AG will come back and they probably will see. But if this is an inquiry or an allegation against the act or omission of a board member, so you always need to draw a line. Who, based on those issues, raise allegations against other people on the board? But she must be able to answer on what is facing her in terms of those things. One, the issue of mismanagement, the issue of finances, which is alleging as one issue, got nothing to do with the board. The second matter, the issue of disclosing conflict of interest, got nothing to do with the board. Probably then when the member responds, then raise and other issues to say, no, they are only because of 1, 2, 3. That does not remove the extra commission of that board member. That's where we are. Now, you see, the issue is, when those other issues come and then they are substantive, we'll deal with those issues at that time. But it cannot be conditional that they must come back and deal with that. You see, when they investigate, when they generally come back and say, hey, some of these allegations the person is raising need further investigation, we must authorize that. And so that to proceed at that particular time when they come to us and say, some of the allegations raised seem to be substantive and so on. We think that there must be further investigation, da, 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 and so on. You see, at that time, we are in a better position because there's preliminary indication in terms of that and so on, and they're coming to engage on that and how to move forward. Probably right, that at that time, we don't even need the board itself, what might go and so on. But that will change, and that for now, we've got a member facing an allegation in terms of 1, 2, 3 issues which raise allegations which need to be tested and then you move on and so on. Or what I'm saying is that we don't have to constrain the processes at the beginning. Because once we do that, it means you are dealing with the entire board, it's not the issue of one board member and so on. And when tomorrow you see the headlines, newspapers and the other thing, it will be saying we institute the commit against the board and so on. So that's why I requested advocate and the member to try and explain this thing so that it's handled correctly. It does not cause unnecessary. But of course, when those things on our member come and say some of these allegations, they seem to be, then we have to take a decision at that time. We're not taking a decision now to investigate them. We're taking the inquiry to say proceed with the issues of the member. But at that time, a report will be presented. Probably when all back and report in the house, it will be at that time when we say, better than this, this is what happened and so on, so we better recommend other action and so on around this particular matter. So if we are able to handle it in that manner, I think it will help. Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just wanting some clarity now. As far as I'm aware, the main reason why the SAEC has disciplined Annika Buhlanti is because she has made serious allegations against the conduct of the board and the way that it fills its mandate. So she has made some very serious allegations against the board. The major issue is not whether she misspent R5,000 on a hotel room, and it's not whether she failed to declare her interest. We know she did, and it may or may not be material. The major issue that she is being disciplined for is being disruptive to the board because she constantly challenges the way they go about their operation. So I think that we need to actually not try and limit what the Arch Auditor General to do, but to actually verify whether Agnes Buhlanti's allegations against the board have any merit and are worth investigating. While with that would then mean that to say he does find that, would then have to institute another process. I understand that fully. But the process right now is to determine whether Agnes Buhlanti is a legitimate whistleblower against the board's actions and the SAB and the Auditor General be able to say, yes, no, these are serial problems, or they're not, and dismiss it, and then we can focus on whether she is actually has a legitimate case or whether she is being unfairly victimized.
No, Honourable Chief, we're not doing it with the one here. If you read the act, you're talking about a board member, not the whistleblower, not his committee. I'm sure the public protector and other entities are dealing with whistleblowers. We're not dealing with whistleblowing here. We're dealing with the issue of a board member. Otherwise, if you read the act, I'm not talking about the public, because see, whistleblowing could be a public person somewhere living and living. And see, the NTA is talking about a board of SADC or a board member. The entire board or board member or can be board members and so on. That's why I'm saying we need to be clear. That's why I'm saying I was making an example with misconduct and a grievance procedure. That you are not when you are facing a misconduct, then you revoke a grievance procedure. That's not how it is done. Otherwise, you render the other process not involved or you cannot proceed with those processes. Because everyone will do that and so on. The issue is that if you read the report of a document, let's go to the informal inquiry. When you go through the informal inquiry, which has its own problem, you will see there are clear issues there which are alleged to be the being what the advocate alleged to have done and so on. There are three or so. One being the financial issue of the hotel, the second one going to meeting of executives without a mandate and so on, the other one and so on. So those issues are there. Now, and if you've listened during the proceeding of the committee, they have been saying, subsequent from these issues, these other issues happened. Now it was the vote of no confidence and so on and so on. Which we're saying, but if you say vote of no confidence, then what? Because does not have any legal effect. The legal effect is clear, what can you deal with it? So if you pass a vote of no confidence for a member, then what? What do you do? You can't effect it, no one can effect it, you can't effect it with a committee. Unless you are clear that a member has done 1, 2, 3, these are the issues. But to say a vote of no confidence does not mean anything in terms of effect of the law and so on. So those are the issues. So that's why I'm saying part of what I advocate will have is that if advocate my class also raise genuine issues and so on, that no one is saying no, push those things aside. But I'm trying to say, you must clarify in terms of what are we doing here as a process, because we don't want to embassy the process ourselves, a wrong process. So when if those issues come as issues for defense, those issues, they are fine, they have to take into consideration. That's why what I was saying. At the time when the report comes, and the report indicates that indeed there are other issues other than, but that cannot take away the issue of the conduct of the member, these other issues and so on. We have to deal with what we're doing oversight to NABC. There is no way you can push those issues aside and say no, because no. Those issues must come up, and then they will have to also be investigated, depending what issues are coming up. If they have to be investigated, they have to be investigated. If the entire board finds to be wanting and so on, they have to deal with the problem. And that's not black hat. But what I'm saying, as for can help us to manage the process, otherwise it's going to be mixed up. We end up having a problem even before we start.
Thank you, Shivan. I think maybe what is happening is that members might be confusing the instruction that will go to the AG and the process that will happen at the AG. The instruction from this committee that will go to the AG is there is an allegation against board member Sabit Mashlati of the following, and we'll list everything that comes in. We'll even list the disruptive behaviour. Please investigate. That will be the instruction that is. So in that sense, this is an investigation against board members. But in the process, because we have foreknowledge, because we've listened to both sides already, the AG will have to listen to what she says. And then where the AG will have an advantage is to say, okay, the committee where you are at the moment, you only heard allegations. You don't know if she is lying about this, if she's just making it up, or if she has serious concerns. The AG will say, well, I now hear what you are saying. Bring me the proof of everything that you are saying so that I can see if you have a valid defense. Then the AG will come back to this committee and say, I've listened to the defense. It's a valid defense. I think there needs to be an investigation. It appears to me there is victimization. Or the AG will come back and say, no, she could not answer to the expenditure. She could not answer to acting outside of the mandate. She could not answer to the disruptive behavior, etc., etc. When I looked at her defense, she could not provide me with any backup for
any of the allegations, and therefore I am of the opinion that clearly this member, the concern of the board against this member is bad. So that is where I think maybe the confusion comes in. The instruction will be a board member, but the process will look at her defense as well.
It's better if it's said by you, with your leg and chuckle and so on. But that's what I was trying to explain. So members will agree with that. I'm sure all of us will agree with the AGF ethic investigation and so on, not to do it ourselves as a company. We believe that it will bring a lot of giving us enough time to do other things. I think we got too much in our plate as a committee and so on. The administrative part, they will help us to draft everything and so on in the report to the House. And so dealing with that and so on. But we'll share that report before it goes to the House and so on. That's the process they will embark on. So can we move to the next one? I'm told that there's something here we must look into in terms of the processes. But let us discuss the next one. Of the teaching whilst I'm busy trying to check. Honorable Van Hermes, Mbambi, Sheen, Stain, Keelan, DM, DM and Lazi, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think if we listened to the input from the advocate Van Hermes, the most safest and best option to follow would be to call the DG and the minister to come and account for the situation that has occurred. And even though it is a very serious matter, I think that would be the best option for us to follow, to have the minister here to explain her side of the story, to have the DG here to explain her side of the story, and then the committee can take the matter further with regards to what we would like to see and actions that we would like the minister to take going forward. Thank you.
Next on the view.
I can see in terms of wearing close to your color, we are trying to move that way, but you must see a little bit more. I can see the flow crossing of colors. Okay, you can do that.
Thank you. Let me agree with Honorable Fandermen.
Not the advocate. Okay.
So, it looks like when I explained it to him after the meeting, Honorable Kedana, what I have said. The issue here is that we view this matter on Israel's as a committee, and the incidences that occurred in this house, then we need to cause the DG to come and account for what has happened, and we also need to listen to the minister's view on the matter. At the end of the day, that will assist us in coming with the decision that will also set as a precedent for those that might think not to take this House and committees of Parliament seriously. Basically, that's what we need to address. And if you will come and explain why it's here to go to an extent of life, and then the minister will also put her side of the story and then we'll conclude on that. Thank you, Chair.
Killer Ocean? Who wants to start first? The senior officer?
This is the back row here. I would like to, obviously, I think that we need to have the DG and the minister come before us with their version of events and hopefully some sort of action that has been taken since the meeting at which this all erupted. Hopefully there's been some progress on the agreement between them. But I think that in order for us to determine what action should be taken, we need to ask for relevant transcripts from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group discussion of those two meetings, the relevant bits that we should have at that meeting, and also the documents that the Director General presented to the committee on the last meeting, where I believe that he left her name off that list deliberately. I think it was a deliberate attempt to deceive the committee. I think that must be produced as evidence as well at that meeting. And that we have this meeting in the last week of December at the latest. in the first week of December, the last week of the term, at the absolute latest, so that we can resolve the issue at that meeting on what action needs to be taken. This is very serious, and I think it's up to Parliament and us as members of Parliament to actually start to crack the whip on serial transgressions by public service. They constantly get away with this information and misinformation and trying to pull the wood over our eyes and incomplete documentation. And we live with this all the time. And what we're actually going to now is letting the public service know that misleading information to Parliament is actually a serious offence and it's got to stop.
Honourable Shin, why? Probably why said the last week of December? Oh, the last week of December. Oh, the term, okay.
Chairperson, yes. If I look at the program that we still have to adopt today, I think it is important for us to finalise this matter before the year ends. And it is going to be difficult, except that we could possibly look at the last week of November before we move on to December, but I actually concur with the two previous members that we need to conclude on this matter. Secondly, Chairperson, it is going to be very important for this committee. I believe there is another committee where they also face a similar case of misrepresentation to Parliamentary Portfolio Committee, and the time has come for us to really take very firm steps. We are facing a situation in the country where politicians are being held to account by the electorate every 5 years, and if we have a situation where we are not receiving accurate, correct information that is not being concocted or doctored to suit a particular public official, it is important that we set the tone. The act is there, it is a criminal offence, and we should start to implement the legislative provisions at our disposal. I concur with Honourable Duncan that this is a very, very serious matter, and the message must go down to all public institutions and all public entities appearing before parliamentary committees. If you withhold information or deliberately mislead Parliament and the factual information is appearing afterwards, you will be held to account and you will be your record will be in jeopardy, your clean record, because this is a criminal offence to mislead Parliament. We are sitting here as representatives of the public, and as I say, we are being held to account, and therefore these officials must also be held to account. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, DM.
Thanks, sir. I also want to concur with the previous DM, but mine is just a little action or advice to the committee that when we sat in the previous committee where the incident happened, as you all heard, as Honourable Killian said, you must be given transcripts of what happened. I think what would be advisable for us as the political committee is to say when we call the DG, DG, you, this is what you said, you have a performance contract, can you please provide this or avail it to the portfolio committee? That's the first thing. So that here is the contract that the DG says she has, and therefore from there, we then go further to say, but if it's not signed, you ask her, has it been, you see it has not been signed, why did you inform us otherwise? And then it is only after that discussion with the DG that you say, Minister, this is what has happened. The DG is saying this, therefore what is it that you are planning to do as the accounting authority to Parliament now? Because it is the minister that has the responsibility to execute whatever action to her appointee or employee, sorry. But we cannot say the minister must come and account. In this case, the minister does not have anything to account us in Parliament. But it is the DG that has said in front of Parliament, I do have a contract, 2012-2013. We have signed with the minister. And therefore, if that's not there, the minister must then tell us what action can be taken. But she's not here that day to account on that. She's here to respond based on what her accounting
officer, which is the DG, has said in front of Parliament. I don't know if I'm making sense. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I concur with what my colleague said, not entirely with what the Deputy Minister has said. I think the important thing is we need to get the facts, after which we can take a decision. However, my colleague also indicated that the Minister must also tell us what happened since this alleged infringement came to light, what steps have been taken. But I think we need to make it very clear that whatever steps have been taken must not mitigate the historical evidence that of whether the alleged misrepresentation. But in terms of what the Deputy Minister said, I do think that the Minister needs to also come and give the facts, because it was incumbent upon the Minister within a reasonable period of time after the appointment of the DG to in fact make sure that there is a performance agreement in place. And if that hasn't happened within a reasonable period of time, and a year is certainly not a reasonable period of time in my estimation, then we need to know why. Nothing was done in the interim to make sure that there's a performance agreement in place. But the important thing is we get all the facts and then we make a decision to the way forward. Thank you.
Honorable Mutua, I'll come back to
I just came in and I don't know how far I'm sorry. If I am repeating what has been said, you're correct. You know, I don't hear we are going to respond. We have had a club from the advocate. And how she has outlaid the importance of the minister being here. Then to me it means it's not a confrontation of the DG towards the minister. We are dealing with the truth of the matter, of what transpired. And if it comes to a push whereby the DG is still saying she has submitted a bomb. And then here there's also a question of who has who here, and who is the subordinate, who is the head. Those are some of the things that are going to come up maybe when we are dealing with that issue. But what I agree with is that the minister must be here according to what the advocate has read to us, her legal opinion. And that would give us a chance of hearing exactly what was the delay of acting on what she transpired. Because to me, there is something wrong. That's why I'm even saying who has who here and who is supporting me. Because it cannot happen in this manner. And then, I agree with my colleague as well, who saying that even if that happens, you know, the subject matter is what transpired on that day. That is what we want to know. How and why. Thank you.
Unless something different, tell me. If it's something different.
No, I wanted to propose closure matter for us not to get into the meeting because we are still going to deal with the matter. I think we have accepted the matter. I wanted us to close the matter to say that I believe the day earlier the night, if they are said that we hear this matter in the
Parliament?
No, Chairperson, I just want to concur with the Honourable Mutambi. Thank you for the thought of this matter.
I also concur, I don't differ, but I just wanted to advise the Procedural Committee, which I think it is our responsibility also moving forward, to ensure that we advise the executive that all the time we make the senior management appointment, the security clearance that is ongoing. One cannot be appointed if that process has been cleared. I think we need to make it a point that as Parliament now, we have responsibility that the executive ensures that. Because if we have that, then we are able to say, like Act is saying, the one of the recommendations or whatever, advices from the legal side, which if this person was sworn in, then you are able to take A, B, C, D when C or he lies in front of parliament. Therefore, it is important that as they are employed in the department, you know at a certain stage you put it there in the criteria. At a certain stage you say, we are going to introduce, but first A. This is what we need to undergo. Thanks.
Thanks, DM. You know, I was listening to Advocate Van der Rome. I just thought about that. It is part of the performance contract of the DG, the senior official, is team of coming to Parliament and to Parliament information. I'm just thinking of, or it has by the way. I'm just thinking about that probably, but not an issue now. Moving forward, exactly, probably some will need to tighten the screw. But it's the side of the executive, unfortunately. But there's nothing wrong for the comment for them to consider. Members, we are done with the matter. Honorable Tour? No, I've not closed them, eh? I've not closed them. Advocate, you must help us here. The issue of the minister being present. My whether so that when we finalize it, we understand each other. Then, if we call the DG and the minister is there, and it's not at that point where the minister must tell us what he's going to do, because he can't give us, I suppose, the final answer at that point. It's for us, I want to check with you whether it's for us to get the sense of the DG and then recommend course of action to the minister or what the minister must do. But on the day when the DG comes, the minister can come so that he can also give his advice in terms of what the DG is saying. Not necessarily to tell us what he's going to do, that, but just to the issue of the information so that we know that the facts are right. So I want us to get it right correctly because I don't want that if that happens, the minister is there, there's a matter of planning today. Hey, tell us, what are you going to do? Now, what the minister today, I'm going to do this, but what informs that? Probably because he might also engage certain processes and so on and so on. But I want to clarify that issue, do you really need the minister to be part when the DG is here? Or we have to call the DG, then we recommend the minister. Can you help us there so that we're able to balance it correctly? Don't just leave it loose.
Thank you, Chairperson. My opinion to this committee sort of envisaged the DG to explain to the committee, and if the committee is not satisfied with that explanation, then to go to the minister and say, what are you going to do about it? But during the discussion, the proposal was made that the minister should be present when the DG explained to the committee. Although that is not necessary, it is not a requirement. From a practical point of view, it makes sense to me to have the minister here. The minister might not be able to give an immediate response, but the minister might, depending on what comes out. So the minister is at all times able to say to the committee, I am shocked by what I'm hearing here, and I will have to go and see what is going on and come back to this committee. But on the other hand, like I said, my initial opinion was, you need to get the facts from the DG. That is the first instance. Whether the minister is here to hear that or not is not a requirement. Something else maybe that has come up that might speak towards having the minister here, if not to answer, but just to listen, is the concern that the person might be giving conflicting information. So the person, the DG might be sitting in this committee and say one thing, go back to the department and say something else to the minister. So that is made a way to avoid that. But I don't see that, for instance, let's say that the minister can't make it before next year. There's no reason for this committee to say, well, then we have to wait. The committee can then call the DG and at least start getting closure on this matter.
Thank you. I wanted that language because it seems I'm just looking to a situation where the DG is very much in the middle of the area lying or whatever, or vice versa. And then it becomes clumsy. That's why, as far as possible, if the minister is not a major player, we must as possible get the DG to get the specs and then refer the matter to the DG. I'm just looking into that. That's what I was asking. But like you are saying, that if the minister is there, I hope we can also manage and we put up the DG. But I'm just looking to the situation where the other one says this, the other one cannot herself start to want to respond to those issues and then for the minister and the DG. And before the committee. And if other throats and so on, or you know, start doing and other things and so on. That's why I was asking, remember. But to still have an opinion that a view that the minister must be, or must have called the DG to get the effects and then refer the matter to the DG. That's why I'm raising the matter again, because those things sometimes happen, and you can't stop them. If a person just press the mic and speak, you can't stop that. You will be late anyway at that time. So,
I feel strongly that the minister should be present for two reasons. This conflict is a conflict between the minister and the DG. So the minister has a direct responsibility. But secondly, it's always better to hear first hand if you have to respond to information, rather than a he says, she says. And so if we have the two parties together, and it doesn't have to be an inquiry, we want to get the facts. It's best if the minister hears first hand what the DG says, or the DG hears first hand what the minister says, rather than get the report from us and have to get the transcript and all sorts of things. So my first preference would be, if the minister is available, that you should be present.
Thank you. We'll do so, if that's what you agree. We are looking for possible next week Tuesday, if they are available. Do you disagree with today?
No, I think I thought this is okay.
We're going to
have
a good day. That concludes the matter. Thank you. No, thank you very much, members. I'm going to conclude that matter in that way. Possible members, we have to juggle around the program. We'll talk to the parties. If they are available, we'll see where it's possible that the next week should they come. If they are available. If they are not, we'll look at their availability and so on. But the sooner we deal with metals effects, so that we don't have the issues spreading and so on. But members must go back to the first issue. I'm told that we must read the report, because this committee must adopt the report to go to the House and so on. But I see one issue in this report, which is my cause purpose. report on the Portfolio Committee on Communication on the South African Broadcasting Corporation. SABC, Section 1-5, Inquiry Process. The Committee on Communication, having considered the complaint from the SABC Board and response by Advocate Maslati, reports as follows. The Committee received a briefing from the SABC Board on its inquiry regarding a board member, a board member's conduct, Advocate Maslati, on Tuesday, 18 September. The board has also passed two votes of no confidence against Advocate Maslati with allegations of misconduct. The committee also afforded Advocate Maslati an opportunity to present their version of events. The committee sought legal opinion on how best to deal with the matter from the Parliamentary Legal Services. The committee was briefed by the Parliamentary Legal Service advisor on the above matter. Having deliberated on the legal opinion as provided by the legal advisor, the committee recommends that 1. An inquiry be conducted in terms of Section 15A. Let me back up. An inquiry is conducted in terms of Section 15A, capital letter A, by the committee. 2. The committee be authorized to refer the matter to the Office of the Auditor General for a special integrated audit. 3. A report of the Auditor General be considered by the committee for recommendations to the National Assembly. And 4. The National Assembly, in terms of Section 15A2A, be
comment to the abolishing authority and advocate Kawe Arzim Shashi be suspended as a report member of the SNPC until the finalization of the inquiry in terms of Section 15A. That's the draft report. I know the last issue, we had some discussion about probably we need to pass that ahead of the last issue. Honorable Killer.
Chairperson, just one other outstanding issue, and that is we've not established from the Office of the President if they have closed their 15A investigation. So shall we not just insert a clause there and then just make contact with the Office of the President to ask them for confirmation that they regard that matter as for information only? And then we include that so that we know that process has been concluded, because from what I can recall, the African Fund of Madhava suggested that we must just make sure that one process is concluded. That's the one issue. The second issue is I would like to propose that instead of making a formal recommendation, that we are saying the matter of the possible suspension of Advocate Mahlangu, well, in fact, I would have liked that to be silent on that, because we can't really prescribe to the President what he should be doing. That is his prerogative in terms of the Act. But that we either remain silent, or secondly, that we say in the report that we will not prescribe to him if he should or should not suspend Advocate Mahlangu during the course of the process. But the first choice would be that we remain silent and that we leave it up to the Office of the President. Thank you.
Advocate Fadzaman, on the first matter of the President, in fact, he told me also the President that they are not doing anything about that, myself. Who has asked it? Murotuwa, Sin?
Shall we then not just perhaps say that having established that there will not be an investigation from the committee, therefore resolved X, Y, Z. Because then we indicate that we understand that that process is not going anywhere and we will have to conduct a 15 capital A process.
No, see, she will respond on the jargon. Honorable Sheikh. Honorable Murotuwa, if you are not sure your birthday, I'm not sure, Honorable Murotuwa.
Concerned about the utterance used by Honorable Killian of restricting us maybe to just quiet. Because from what I heard, maybe I haven't heard it properly, it allows us as the committee to recommend to Parliament that if we are recommending a person should be suspended, we can do so to Parliament. And then Parliament will recommend this to the President. It says we may. So I don't know why should we be re-suppressing ourselves.
Is any better way of dealing with the last one? The next hand was seen. If I will respond.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just support Dr. Killian's suggestion that we remain silent on the issue of the suspension. I do not think that initially we should do so. If there is a need to take the inquiry further, then maybe it could be a suggestion. But I think at this stage we should remain silent.
Honourable Father, on your response, how to or is the other way around, advocate. The last line, I understand your issue, that to highlight to the appointing authority that has got the option. How do you deal with that and the other things and so on? Who's hands is next? Family? then?
Chairperson, I just want to say that actually the Act doesn't say that we should express an opinion on that. The Act gives the prerogative lies with the appointing body. And therefore, that is why my suggestion was that we just remain silent about the matter. We don't need to comment on that issue. Thank you.
And they are okay to respond it when I say so. Thanks, you still have the matter. What are you going to do?
Because I really, you know, Steve, I wanted to clarify my situation. I am saying this as this committee. We ask for a legal advisor to guide us. This is part of what the legal advisors was dealing with. And then the process that you will choose, one of the processes is saying that we can recommend to Parliament in the instance of maybe suspending or whatever we recommend. That is why I'm saying I never spoke about X. No, I'm not a legal person. I don't deal with X. If it's not, I deal with the present situation that prevails. So that is the reason why I say we cannot restrict ourselves on being quiet and keep quiet. I don't know what that means, keep quiet, what a state.
Thank you, Advocate. I've raised the matter. You responded. Help us to move forward. You can respond on the other issues.
Thank you, Chairperson. In respect of the presidency, we have quickly reworded it a little bit so that we say, having deliberated on the legal opinion as provided by the legal advisor and having established that there will not be any action by the presidency on section 15, subsection 1, paragraph A, inquiry conducted by the SABC board, the committee recommends that. I think that takes care of that. And then, in respect of the suspension, we sort of drafted the skeleton while everyone was still discussing. So we did not know which way the discussion was going to go on suspension. That is why it is in there. But what we can maybe do is, I think the general feeling that I got was that the members would like to leave this up to the appointing authority, whether to sustain or not. So perhaps what we can simply do, and it might also be the polite thing to do, is to simply say that there must be a notification to the presidency that it is an inquiry. And then the presidency can decide whether they want to do anything or not. So the last thing to simply say that the National Assembly informs the presidency of this inquiry that will be conducted. But what I've suggested is that we change the suspension aspect. I've explained to the committee members that we did a skeleton during the tea break, just so that we can have something ready for the committee. So we actually put in everything there, and then we started taking out. So we did not know which way the committee was going to go in respect of suspension. And it seems to me that the committee would rather leave it for the appointing authority to decide whether or not, and not even necessarily make a recommendation. So what I propose is that perhaps just also in being polite to the appointing authority is to add something that says the National Assembly. We're saying recommending to the National Assembly that the following be approved, that the National Assembly inform the presidency of the inquiry to be conducted. So then the presidency will know there is a Section 15A inquiry, and even if, you know, there could be informal discussion with the office of the presidency, but then it is for the presidency to decide whether that suspension is relevant or not relevant.
Agree. Let me see that one. Not agree. Do you want to?
No, not agree.
what she's saying is that as the last recommendation is that we must inform the appointing body about the entire inquiry, then the appointing body will be the one decide to suspend or not. That's what she was saying. Honorable Tamli?
Well, I read this text. Nothing prevents us from recommending to the appointing authority what needs to happen. And I want this committee to do the recommendation. I've got my other reasons in my experience, because at the end of the day, she won't be seen as the appointing authority's business. It must come from us, because at the end of the day, we are the person that appointed this person as committee to this. So why can't we do it as a committee to recommend to the appointing bodies that he must accept?
Honorable Mthambi, I hear you. Look, I thought originally this was an issue which was difficult because we didn't streamline the process, what it was all about. I thought when the process was streamlined now to be an issue of the member after the advocate is outlined, it was going to be an easy issue. But because before, it was very difficult because at one point we thought we were dealing with the entire thing, but it was a matter which was focusing to one board member and so on. So I thought that probably now it will be a little bit easier than in the past full time and so on. But members, we are here to persuade each other on issues and so that we agree. If we are not, this democratic process is a problem, but I think we can still engage on the matter. And see how to persuade the other one is. It's a matter of national importance, actually. It's not just a light issue.
I think that until we have some clarity from the Auditor General, I think it would be a bit harsh to suspend the advocate simply because she's raised made some complaints that are now the subject of this inquiry. I think if the Auditor General verifies the issue, and then perhaps after that, if it goes further, then suspension can come in. But I think that at this stage, this is just an initial step.
Steve?
I want to support it, and I want to use the Broadcasting Act, the one we've been talking about, 15A. I mean, it says the National Assembly may, after due inquiry and by adoption of a resolution, we are starting the inquiry. And then Section 15A2 said the appointing body may suspend a member from office at any time after the start of the proceedings. So the provision that once the inquiry starts and the appointing body feels that the member should be suspended, that can happen. But we're at the beginning of the inquiry process, and perhaps it's a little bit unfair to assume that the member should be is guilty and should therefore be suspended.
You see, once the National Assembly adopts the resolution, then the appointing body can act. That's the minimum of that, is the adoption. Once the House adopts the resolution of the inquiry, then the appointing body can act as the council appointed. So, clarify what I wanted to clarify for members to say, we are not going to wait for the General to give a preliminary family. Once the resolution is true in the House, then appointing body may do the transmission or whatever thing. Honorable, whose honorable name is up?
Actually, where I understand the discussion to be going is that whether we suspend or not, if we do it now, it might be a little too much, because if we leave it for the vote, this is after looking at the allegation from both sides. She can decide what the next step is. So why don't you leave that at the same time?
You are reading the same mistake. I'm trying to correct, remember. There's nothing auditor general has to do with the suspension. Even ourselves, when we do the inquiry, it has nothing to do with the suspension. The suspension remains a discretion of the appointing body. So in the interest of the public broadcaster, if the appointing body says I cannot have a board member continuing our investigation, can deem the precautionary suspension and suspend that member pending the investigation.
advocate. I don't want to talk your language, but that's how I understand it. That is purely discretion of the appointing board in the interest of the public program, where you can have a board member continue to be a board member under investigation. So you make that call and so on. So the only thing I was looking for was the information that does cover the ANC concern. Maybe you can come again with the draft team of the last part.
Chairperson, I actually seem to have misunderstood. It seems to me that there is a part of the committee that feels strongly that there should be suspension recommended, at least. The fact that the appointing body must still decide otherwise, members accept that, but they would still like to make the recommendation. And if that is the case, I think the committee will have to just make a decision. Does the committee recommend suspension, or does the committee not recommend suspension? And if the committee recommends, then the first draft will stand, which says that in terms of Section 15, capital A, subsection 2, paragraph A, recommend to the appointing authority that advocate Mashlati be suspended as board member of the SABC until the finalisation of the inquiry in terms of Section 15A. What will happen if that is so, if that is adopted by the House, is the committee will probably draft the letter for the speaker to go out. And in that letter, the committee will have to indicate this is what is being investigated. And then the appointing authority will be able to decide whether it is necessary or not. So I think it's really a decision for this committee to say, do we want to recommend it strongly, or do we not want to say anything? And if that is the case, then I would still recommend that at least we have something that informs the presidency of the inquiry, because otherwise how will the presidency know that there is an inquiry?
Okay, members, that's the suggestion. Can we live with the last one that we inform the court? The appointing body to act must be informed that there is a inquiry. That's the only time we can act, to suspend or not. I'm saying, but your suggestion to be advised to say suspend. But the legal services advocate panel member is saying, there are ways to inform the president that there is an inquiry. So the president now must go back into what the act says, and then you can consider whether to suspend or not. I'm just reading that because it would seem even if we recommend it, that not given that the president will still have to decide whether or it's not mandatory. But even if we inform the president about the inquiry, it can still suspend. It's up to him and so on. So I'm just trying not to get a million roots here on this matter, because I don't think it's a matter which must divide us. In terms, you're saying many times, what is
it? I thought that you were asking us, there is no way of also having you in that chair for us. Also give us direction sometimes for me to say, I agree with you, Sir President, at the end of the day, when we have informed him that the appointing board, he still needs to use his discretion at the end, whether to sustain or not. But isn't that he will have been informed also about the recommendation, the decision of the House. So let's allow that discretionary power to deal with the appointing authority. I think that's a next incident that won't divide us if we're to reconcile it. So can we trust that the appointing authority will exercise its discretion accordingly and appropriately?
Agreed. No, members, I won't repeat the entire statement, except that we need to write the last one, that we must inform the appointing body so that it's going to be able to know that the thing is happening, then can exercise its powers or her powers in terms of doing that. Would that be agreeable? Honorable Mutua?
Something just like my mind before you move and then the legal advisor here was saying we decided to draft something
and trust continuous decision. I want to ask you, because Martin has a wrong concept about this. Is Ken Goshi promoted to the legal advice?
No, is that this matter is that actually the matter I was supposed to go to that they have been very much helpful. I think here we are dealing with a very difficult issue and the characters are very difficult, but they have been helpful in terms of making sure that we don't fault. There's been a lot of correspondence in between so that we don't fault and so on. And all even the agenda, the drafting of the agenda for this thing, I've entirely outsourced it to them. So that we make sure that we are within the legal parameters and so on. So they've been very much helpful, but I'm not sure about the promotion matter. We'll look into that and ascertain whether it's true or not. But members, we have to adopt the report. Honorable Kille, I'm moving the adoption.
I'm moving for the adoption.
And Usta Kondi? No, that's the ANC. The IFP is the ANC. IFP is the court. Honorable Tutu? You want to tell it? No, you can tell it. Members, let's deal with the program probably next week when we have checked the issue of DG and so on. Their availability and so on. Honorable Shin?
We're discussing the program. That add two things.
And let the issues start to finalize it.
Yeah, sure. There were two other issues that we haven't concluded this year that I think we could perhaps put into that last week of the term. And that one is the SABC's report on the SIU investigation progress. They were going to come back to us with more details if we actually, so actually chart the progress of the process. So if we can put them on, that would be great. And we also, we'd ask the post office to come back to us with a breakdown of the costs and benefits of their program to assimilate cattle workers into their structure. You know, it was going to cost them $42 million for a breakdown of that. So, you know, it would be a short presentation, but if we could conclude that before the year's out, it might be a good idea.
Thanks. We'll check in terms of the time. It seems we're having too much on our plate. Believe me that we've been receiving a lot of calls, but the public, if you remember, they are also expecting us to do the issue of cost to communities. We made an undertaking earlier that we're going to have a public hearing around a particular matter, and the pressure is mounting, but I'm saying we've got so much time available. Well, probably it's a matter which we shall be trying to think how do we deal with that, because it's a very sensitive matter and a very burning issue in our context, in our eating, global and the continent and so on. It's because of that particular matter. So, but we look into that. I'm aware that members are interested towards the end of them. I don't want that the only two of us attend the meeting. The two of us attending the meeting, otherwise you chair and your meeting continue. We are busy with other things and so on. We look into that honorable thing and also the other issue and see how do we play around those particular matters and so on. I think we got too much on our side. In fact, the issues that are remaining need the entire year to analyze them, what do I have remaining for the shortest of time. So, thank you very much, members. For the engagement and everything, we are done for today. We'll meet later. Thank you. Not later today, later next week. Thank you very much.